Maddie, Sherelle. This is RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
Certainly is. Great to have Sherelle with us on a Wednesday morning. Always love a Wednesday when Sherelle joins us. And we always love getting a chance to chat to the captain of the Hawthorn Football Club, Ben McAvoy. It's been a challenging year for the Hawks, but this week he plays game number 150 for the club and qualifies for life membership as well. Big Mac, good morning.
Good morning, Harf. How are you, mate?
I'm going very well, thank you, mate. How are you holding up physically, mentally? It's been a long, grinding year for the Hawks. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Just physically trying to get blown away today. It's just a bit of a wild, woolly day. not looking forward to just arrived out in beautiful Mulgrave. Fortress still windy out here, so it could be fun at training today. But, yeah, no, look, no doubt, been a very challenging year. But that's how it goes sometimes. And we're just got to keep pushing forward and, try and find our way back up the ladder, mate.
Just on the ground, on the work out there at Wave with the Rico Centre, is it still the world's windiest place? When I was playing out there, it was a disaster. You got a lot of townhouses surrounding the oval these days. Does it affect the wind?
It's still tunnels down between them pretty well. In my experience, it's certainly a close tie between here and my time at Seaford with St Kilda. had a couple of real doozies.
It's squirrely down there for sure. For sure. Ben, talk to us about taking over the captaincy of this great club. When you were first named into that position, you said it kind of made you feel a little bit uncomfortable in that. Has it settled in with you a bit more as the season's progressed?
I think it has a little bit, but certainly still, any time I reflect on it and you think about, the history of this club and some of the names that have come before me, it's still very humbling any time I think about it. But, once you sort of sink your teeth into the work and there's been plenty of challenge for me this year. So it's even though it's been a tough year, it's gone really quickly for me because being so busy and working so hard to try and, lay some foundations for our young guys. We've had 8 debutants this year, so a really young list, and there's been lots of challenges around that. So, certainly enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah, and I was going to ask about that because there has, as it has for everyone, no matter what they're doing, been a lot of uncertainty. And the way things are thrown at AFL clubs and having to move and the situation with the coaches at the moment at Hawthorn, there has been a lot for you to kind of digest and approach. How do you work that with the larger playing group? Do you try and protect them in a way from that sort of thing? Or how do you approach making sure that those things don't affect what's happening out on the field?
Yeah, look, it's hard, isn't it? I heard some of your comments before. I think Adam was talking about the challenges with social media and such. In today's world, we all have so much access to information, so it's really hard to keep yourself inside a bubble. But yeah, all we can do is focus on the stuff internally that we're working on. We're here to get better and try and perform and win as many games of footy as we can, which obviously providing some challenges at the moment. But as best you can, you can only focus on the things that you're in your control and that you can help and try and as best you can acknowledge the outside noise, but shut it out as best you can.
So, Ben, just back to the captaincy thing. Have you changed your role at all, or have you changed your approach at all as captain, or have you just been Ben McAvoy?
Look, mate, as best I can, I've tried to just be Ben McAvoy. Obviously, things change in terms of your role changes and you have some more responsibilities. You're having a lot more conversations and making decisions that you wouldn't have otherwise. But, I was had the privilege of being voted in by my peers that they gave me their support to lead this footy club. And so they didn't vote for, a different version of me. They voted for me as who I am and the way I go about things. So as best I can, I've tried to stick to that.
And how has it been? I mean, it's good to be able to talk to it's great to be able to talk to the captain of the Hawthorn Footy Club. Just in that whole last couple of weeks with Sam and Alistair and how that's all played out, as captain, have you had to counsel the players at all? Have you had to speak to the players all about that little period? Or are we overblowing it outside the football club as the distraction it was?
To be honest, it's quite a varied response. because you have guys in my position who've been around for a long time, been part of success with Clarko, and so there's that natural nostalgic attachment. And what does this mean going forward? There's all the side around guys with contracts, who's in contract, who's out of contract, or what does this mean for me? There's a lot of younger guys, especially ones who have contracts, that have great relationships with Sam. It's like, to be honest, probably have hardly batted an eyelid over it. So there's a hugely varying response, which is absolutely normal and expected. That's just, we're all humans. So certainly I got the place together at the right time to just get their thoughts, how are we all going, can we help in any way? But yeah, look, I've tried to keep things as level as possible in terms of we've still got games to prepare for week to week. And in terms of our overall direction, it doesn't change anything in terms of, you know, the things that we're trying to build on, getting really good at doing the little things well, and those sort of things that will drive us to improve our performance and get back up the ladder.
Ben, were you consulted on the decision when they're about to make it, or considering making the decision, the board, about the handover and the succession plan?
No, I was not consulted. So it caught, well, certainly the playing group caught us by surprise. Not in terms of the fact that it's not like Clarko can coach forever.
Yeah.
You know, we know we have to move forward at some point, but in terms of the timing on it, no, I'll be honest, that was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised. I just thought I'd ask and see if they had consulted you, the captain, and got his counsel on that. Just on your time at Hawthorn, 150 games this week against the Brisbane Lions down in Tassie, which has always been a happy hunting ground for the Hawks. But it's life membership qualification at the Hawks, which is a great thing for you to have. When you left St Kilda to come to Hawthorn, what did you expect? What did you hope for?
Oh, look, I can't really remember. I just remember, or think back now, I was so naive coming across. I was so incredibly lucky to get the opportunity to play in two premierships in my first 2 years at Hawthorn. But certainly I didn't envisage probably being here this long. I've just turned 32, so you know, to be able to play, I'll be going to my 15th season next year. That's just it's fairly rare. It would probably seem significant if I wasn't playing with a guy like Sean Burgoyne, who look like an amateur. But look, yeah, I've just been so privileged in my career to be able to have the experiences that I've had, and yeah, funnily enough, my first game for Hawthorn was against Brisbane down in Tassie. So funny how things work out like that. But yeah, look, I'm not really sure what I expected. I know I was still very naive when I came across here as a 24-year-old. But yeah, whenever I do get to leave here, I know that I've been very lucky, the experiences that I've had.
Well, you've given a fair bit back too. Don't worry about that. I'm very thankful for your time in the brown and gold, all the Hawks fans out there. As you said, a two-time premiership player, now captain in 150 games. Good luck on Sunday. Hopefully it's a great day for you and the footy club. 2:10 at UTAS Stadium in Launceston. Check your local guides and see Big McAvoy doing his thing in the ruck for the Hawks. Thank you, buddy.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Ben McAvoy, the captain of
great
the Hawks.
To talk to. He's great
awesome,
person to
he?
Talk to.
Yeah, and that's great.
If for those that don't understand, you hear him talk like that, you go, yeah, I can understand why he's the captain and yep. why they voted him to be captain.
Absolutely. And the Hawkers, the draw just a couple of games ago with Melbourne. So they can give things a shake too on their day.
On their day, they can.
On their day.
And Brisbane have been a little bit up and down, so it's an interesting clash, that one.
Yep.
Particularly for the Brisbane Lions down there in Tassie on Sunday.
So we've got a long way to go, and we know we can match up with the best.
With the current climate, this is just the way you got to do things at times.
With the new concussion rules, I think some players wouldn't be telling them, though. There'd be players out there that go, I'm not going to risk missing time.
When a guy remains at a club, then can be incredibly encouraging for the future.
We want to do our bit to ensure that the games go ahead.
We've been really inconsistent. Good football clubs and good football teams don't do that.
Your ticket into the heart of football. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Yeah, let's head down the highway and have a chat to Isaac Smith from the Cats, the all-conquering Cats, who's second on the ladder after 19 rounds of football. Good morning, Isaac.
Morning, Daniel. How are you?
Oh, mate, I'm very well. How's yourself?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good. Can't complain. Sun's shining. Everyone's out of lockdown.
Well,
Well, there's some easing from restrictions, but yes, that's a positive. It's a positive sentiment, Isaac. Well played by you. Well played indeed. Hey, you're going very well, Isaac. You are, and the Cats are. That 38-point win on the weekend against Richmond, on Sunday against Richmond, was almost as clinical as I've seen you. Was it well received within the playing group and the coaching staff as well?
Yeah, I think it was a good, solid win. We put ourselves in a position, especially in that second quarter, to control the game and probably be able to dictate the terms of the game in the second half a little bit. So, yeah, it was a really clinical win. I think all teams have probably found it difficult with no fans, and when you rock up and there's an empty MCG or whatever stadium that you may play at. But, yeah, I thought it was just a good, solid win. We're in a position where we're trying to really set ourselves up for a run towards the end of the year, and I thought we did that.
Do you know what your best looks like yet? I mean, you've never really had the squad that you probably would ideally like out there. There's still some key players missing, but yet you continue to put up some terrific performances.
Yeah, we've got some still got some massive outs, really, when you look at it in the context of the team and how good some of those players are in the competition. But it's been able to give other players opportunity, and we saw on the weekend that Asava Radaglia took his opportunity, and he was probably one of the best players on the ground and one of the most influential players. So it's been really good in that sense. I wouldn't like to be the coaches once everyone gets fit and they've got to pick a side, but that's why they do their job.
We're actually talking about this, Isaac, on Monday with Jimmy about Geelong and what the best team is when everyone's available, and it's actually impossible to pick. So I'm just interested in how that plays out, say, at training and around the club when senior players are having to play really well to hold their spot. You would have had a similar situation, obviously, at Hawthorn. But what's that dynamic like?
Yeah, it's interesting, Whitey, because there's probably different layers of it in the sense that in your team you got your automatic picks, you got your blokes that are pretty much automatic, and then you probably got, you know, a good collection of guys that aren't automatic or aren't in the side and then are on the fringes. So, yeah, it's funny, the dynamic, but I think footy clubs do really well in addressing it and understanding that, you know, it's a team game and it's about the club in the end, and hopefully we can put our best foot forward and, you know, be there in the last week of September. But it's difficult, and I think you always see, especially in finals, those heartbreak stories, but you also see those stories of someone that's sort of come from nowhere and been fit and in form at the right time of year. So I think as players, we just understand the game a little bit, and as a player, you just got to try and play your best footy every week.
Because I guess it's that squad mentality that teams often talk about, because Geelong are known for managing players, particularly because they have this luxury that they always seem to play in the finals. And a guarantee, yeah, that's right. and a guarantee to play finals. So you've got the luxury to do that. But I'm thinking there's a few of them that might not want to be managed because they might not get back in.
Yeah, well, it's difficult. And on the weekend, I know our VFL side had a hit out against Richmond and had a super win. And I'm not exactly sure where they're sitting on that ladder or how the competition's actually structured at the moment. But
no one does. It's all right.
But I'm pretty sure they'd be in the top two or three teams. They've had some massive wins this year, and there's some boys that are playing unbelievable footy. And even using sort of Quinton Narkle as a bit of a reference point, he only played a handful of minutes on the weekend, and he was probably as good as most blokes on the ground.
Yeah, 12 disposals and played a quarter and a half. Mm. Not a bad effort.
Impressive. Isaac, you dismantled the Tigers on the weekend, let's be honest. It was a really complete performance. What's that like? Is that something that you were surprised with, that you were able to do that and handle what they were putting out to you so well?
Yeah, I guess, Sherelle, it's, you know, you go into a game and you'd know full well that there's an opposition you've got to come up against, and ultimately each team wants to play their game style, and we were fortunate that we were on and Richmond weren't able to play theirs, but it is nice. I've been fortunate enough to be in a team that was probably one of the better teams in the competition for 4 or 5 years, and Richmond took that mantle for you know, a good 4 or 5 years. So every time that you can get a win against them, it's really pleasing.
Talk to us about your own form, Isaac, because we all know your history with Hawthorn and your ability to perform in some of those big games, going into finals and taking it right through to the end. Are you feeling like you're building to a big finals campaign personally?
Yeah, personally, I think it's been really nice in the sense that Geelong, and even though we've got a little bit of an ageing list and there's been a fair bit talked about it, they've been really good at managing us, not just through games, but during the week as well, and making sure that we're as fresh as possibly can be come game day. So, yeah, I'm really confident that, you know, and you never know what happens in footy, but hopefully no injuries occur and stuff, and you can hit September in really good condition, because, you know, the most people in football know that you probably decondition a little bit throughout the year. So, yeah, you got to make sure that you hit September in good nick.
I want you to take us into the education room, into the school, about how the game changed on Sunday. So first quarter, it was horrendous football to watch, Isaac. It was shocking.
Yeah, and you know the best thing, Whitey, was I didn't have to watch it.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. So it was 3-1. It was almost like watching Oz kick. They were all on the ball, and it was jammed up, and it was horrendous. But then it changed in the second quarter, and you got on top and started to play a better brand of football. Can you tell me who... Is there one team that is responsible for that style, or is it both, or is it a bit of a stalemate? Why did it happen in the first quarter, and what changed in the second quarter?
Oh, I think it was probably a little bit of a stalemate. I don't want to give a hell of a lot away here, Whitey, but Richmond play a high octane, can't even speak at the moment, game of football. So, you know, they've based their last 4 or 5 years on mass pressure around the ball, and I think we as players for Geelong felt that. And it probably, in that sense, was a little bit of a stalemate. But going into the second quarter, being on the wing, and I noticed it a lot because the ball didn't come my way, I think we got control in stoppages and were able to sort of bust out the front and just enter our forward line a little bit cleaner, which I'm not sure exactly of the timing and the stats, but I think we put on 4 or 5 goals pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it probably opened the game up in that sense. So... to answer your question, it felt like we just got on top around the ball and were able to clear that space, and it probably looked a little bit more fluent football.
Yeah, well, anything would have been more fluent in the first quarter. That was garbage. But you did what you had to do. You set the game up the way you wanted it, and you hit the scoreboard, and then you were able to go berserk in the second term and control the game. It was all over from there. This week, a different encounter down at Blundstone Arena in Hobart against the Kangaroos. Have you played in Hobart? You've been in Tassie lots of times with the Hawks, obviously in Launceston, but have you played in Hobart?
No, I think I've played probably close to 50 games in Tassie and never played at Hobart. I've only ever gone to Belrive to watch cricket.
Right. Do you know much about the venue as a football venue?
No, not a hell of a lot. I effectively only know from going to watch a game of cricket and watching it on TV, but it looks a lot smaller than, say, the MCG, and I think the wind plays a massive factor down there. So it's going to be a pretty tough game this weekend, I think.
Got to play the right side of the ground.
Which one's the right side?
Well, it depends on the wind. You don't want to get caught on the wrong side of the ground on the wing, Isaac. You won't touch it.
Oh, mate, that's what happens at Launceston on the far wing there. So a few of us used to try and fight for the change room side wing, but the difficult thing I found with Geelong is that Zach Tui and Sam Manigola also play the wing, and they've got a fair bit of veteran status about them as well, so it's hard to sort of, you know, pull the trump card and get on the main wing.
It is funny how it plays out, isn't it? I mean, you had about six or seven disposals in the first 5 minutes of the game on Sunday, and then through no fault of your own, the ball just never went where you were for a large portion of the match. I guess that's just a product of the way the game's played these days.
Yeah, it is. And going a little bit probably off just the game of football, Whitey, I think that's what amazes me, especially in commentary and stuff, when they judge games on disposals and different things like that, and not necessarily talking about wingers, but forward pockets or back pockets or half-back flankers, and actually analysing how that individual game's being played before they go at a player in that sense. So, yeah, I think footy's amazing. It allows all shapes and sizes to play, but sometimes the ball just doesn't come to your area.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. All the stats boffins out there, it's more. There's more to the game than just the numbers from so many positional perspectives. Hey, are you really looking forward to seeing what you've got against the Kangas? Because they're going okay at the moment. They'll be a bit of a handful for a fair bit of the journey, I reckon, on Saturday at Blundstone Arena. Isaac, we look forward to seeing you down there for the first time in Hobart. Good luck.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to getting down there. I love Tassie.
I know you do. Have a great time. Isaac Smith with us from the Cats in the Inner Sanctum today. By the way, Geelong are fifth on the VFL ladder. Frankie tells me at the back. 7 wins, 2 losses, 3 byes.
This is a question for both of you.
Oh, yes.
An impossible question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Awesome.
In the last... No, this is serious. It is a serious...
Seriously impossible.
...topic. We've got a scenario where Simone Biles, who is one of the greatest gymnastics people...
Gymnast.
of all time, pulls out of a key event where she was almost a certain winner of the gold medal. We've got a situation where Naomi Osaka, who is arguably the best tennis player in the world, female tennis player in the world, she doesn't compete at the French Open, she doesn't compete at Wimbledon, she falls out in the second round of the Olympics. And it's mental health issues. How are we going to fix this? I told you it's an impossible question.
Can you fix this, please? No, but
do we have a view on how this is happening? Because it's really sad, and we need to find a remedy for it. Not us in this room, but
no, that's helpful because I don't think I've got one.
No,
and it's not an easy answer, that's for sure. But I think, from my perspective, I think. Potentially what's happening is that we're recognising it more and we're creating a space where it's more acceptable or it's safer for people to actually put their hand up and say, I'm actually not okay in this situation. And I think that's a good thing. And I know we then look at those individuals and think, you know, we've not seen this happening much anymore and that's not a great story. It's not a great story for them. And we worry, you know, wonder why they can't compete, wonder why they can't push through those things. But for me, part of the story is half, I don't know if you agree, but it's, I think the environment we operate in is different. So people are more able and more supported to come forward with that thing, which surely is a good thing.
Yeah, well, I think it's absolutely a good thing. And I think you're right. I think the environment that's been created in sport in particular, but in the world as well, general community as well, is that it's now... There's no negative stigma. There's no negative reaction from family, friends, co-workers if you come out and say, you know what, I'm just battling a bit here. Normally you'd push through. In generations past, you'd push through. You'd just fight it out. And yep. Who knows what would happen on the back of that and correct. How that would affect your life and the people that you love and the way you would interact with them. And more often than I imagine, anecdotally, that there would have been a lot of negativity and a lot of negative responses from those situations in previous generations. Now we've at least got a chance to identify it, deal with it, and try and move forward those whoever's affected by that. So I think Sherelle's point's absolutely the pinnacle, the critical part of it. How you sort it out? If has it been there for centuries that we just didn't know? I mean, and what's the human brain? How does the human brain respond to that? How does emotion and feeling affect all this? I mean, we live in a world at the moment, Sherelle, where everything's, you get constant feedback, whether you like it or not. We're wired to the eyeballs with communication and feedback, and that can't be healthy. I don't think it's healthy, full stop. So it's not a healthy life we live in that sort of regard. And athletes are at the center of all that because they're the ones that we all look at and we comment on. We get have emotional responses too, and they're the ones that have to accept that in so many levels. So it's such a wide-ranging conversation.
And that's the thing, as you say, have things changed over the past, let's say, centuries? Of course they have. As you mentioned, half the world we live in is just so different to the world I grew up in, the world I played a majority of my elite sporting career in. That wasn't that long ago. I know I'm old, but it wasn't long ago.
The statue's coming.
The change has been rapid and significant. So I mean, I think there is a big piece around how people cope with that, the expectation that sits around what we want out of our sports stars now. I do think it's very different to what it used to be. And the access people have to them is very different to what it used to be. And I think that there's a piece there that we're not quite getting right at the moment. I see some of the comments that come to individuals, I'm sure we all do this, see comments that are coming to the individual that they're not now just getting on the sporting field, which wasn't great, and, you know, people would hurl things over the fence and that sort of thing. You're in your own bedroom and you're still receiving that type of thing. And I know that's not just
You don't have to
specific.
Receive it.
No, but, well, that's a good question in itself, because if you don't have a media profile, a social media profile, how do you then make your money? How do you then attract sponsors to be able to do the things you need to do? So, Ivan, you're right. You could just switch off from that completely, but then
or you could change your settings.
But that's starting. I mean,
it's a big conversation.
We go for hours on this.
No, I understand.
Because it's a kids thing now. It's,
yes,
it's much peer
broader.
Pressure.
Absolutely.
Social media,
I mean, look. Careful what I say here, but social media has changed society.
Absolutely.
And in a professional sporting sense, it clearly has changed things. So the pressure of expectation was still there for Susie O'Neill and Sam Riley and Ian Thorpe back in the 90s when there was no social media, or into 2000, because the pressure the media put on for them to win gold medals and all that was still there. So it's all there. And then the expectation and pressure they put on themselves. But the social media thing is taking it to whole new levels, because in a way that these athletes want to share on social media the problems they're going through, which almost makes it worse in some respects and easier in other respects. It's just
very complicated.
It's a very complicated. No, it is a very complicated. And then throw in COVID as well. No, but I mean, I talked about Osaka. Now, I don't know whether I quite explain it properly. Yeah, she did participate in Tokyo. She lost early yesterday in the second round.
Yeah,
but she's been out of action for a long time. And you know, these are the absolute pinnacle of athletes, in men and women, that are struggling.
And you would suspect that they, and you would hope that they have all the protections and support around them too, in terms of being able to get through that. And I think it just shows you that it's not easy.
No.
It's not an easy answer, and it's not an easy fix, and it's something we'll grapple with.
I'll tell you who's not struggling as we move forward, because that can go for another 4.5 hours, that conversation.
We need a forum.
Well, you do love a forum. Stacey Marinkovic is going gangbusters. She's not struggling. She's coached the West Coast Fever and the Australian Diamonds as well, just by the way. And the West Coast Fever, did you know, number one on the Super Netball ladder. They are top of the table, and they've had some challenges to get there this journey. But Stacey coached her 100th game on the weekend, and she's with us. Stace, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us. Now, you've faced an unbelievable challenge this year. I must admit, from afar, it's been quite a remarkable watch to see the Fever start 4 games behind, and now, with a couple of games to go, sit on top of the Super Netball ladder. How proud are you of your team?
Yeah, really, really proud. I think the way in which they've really been able to focus on just what they can control, I think that's been the biggest growth for us as a group, and staying in the moment. I think, you know, just regardless of points, but also COVID and moving around and things like that, the girls have just really taken on literally each day as it's come, and then each game and each time they've focused, they've been able to grow their performance. And, you know, last night was a really good example of that. It's probably the most rounded performance I think we've put out this season.
How did you frame the season, Stacey, having the deficit to start with? I mean, how did you to sell it to the girls to keep that hunt, which they seemingly have shown throughout the season?
Yeah, I think obviously we were gutted as a team just to be in that predicament, and we had to wear that as a club, and you know, obviously with what happened. But I think for the girls, they work extremely hard. They're absolutely professional in what they do, and obviously our high performance group, and particularly the players, had no involvement in what happened. So for them, they just wanted to make sure that they made the most of this season, and we've been building over time. Obviously, we had a close season last year and obviously fell short to Vixens, and you know they played extremely well. So we know we've got the capability. We just needed to refocus, work out what it is where we wanted to grow the performance. But if we stay united, kept our heads together, then we knew that we could still do some pretty amazing things this season.
Stacey, before Sherelle grills you, she's got about 58 questions for you. I asked Sherelle this myself about being a coach through a corona environment around how much sort of leeway do you give to the players that they can't be at their absolute best because of the uncertainty, because of the compromise, all these sorts of things when it comes to preparation, and how much of it is that, nope, this is the situation, there's no excuses. Have you been able to find that balance?
I think you've got to understand that, you know, at different points, people are going to be challenged probably more mentally than physically at different points. And it's understanding your playing group and what it is that they need to have that support around them to enable them to be the best that they can be. And I think at the end of the day, most teams have had a story to tell or a journey, whether that's been relocated to a different state or whether, that's been, bags packed and that indecision as to what was actually going ahead. So I think for us as a group, it wasn't about an excuse around performance. It was an understanding of the environment we were actually in and how do you make the most of that time, or how do you adjust and be able to adapt quickly. And I think the teams that had that most in check are still able to get the most consistent performances. And I think we've been able to do that through our performance psychologist with the way she interacts with the girls. And, I mean, they've been there before. I mean, I'm in exactly the same hotel room I was 12 months ago. So the familiarity of it all at the moment is quite astounding, really.
Well, what is the sense up there, Stacey? Obviously, we're all watching from afar as everyone, we're talking a little bit earlier, made the dash up to Queensland across the border. What is the sense of how this season is playing out? Is there still a sense of excitement around it, or is there a little bit of, wow, this season is a really tough one, even in comparison to last year?
Yeah, I think as soon as the new draws come out and there's an end point and players can see what that actually looks like, I think there's a sense of relief. I think there's, athletes are creatures of habit. They like schedules. They like to know what they're doing. What are they aiming towards? How many games do they have to play in a week? Where are they going to be based? All those type of things. So I think for Fever in particular, for us to get routine, get some normality, so we're back at the same hotel that we were. They know where their favourite coffee shop is. They know where their favourite food outlet to get that routine going. And, as soon as they've got a schedule and they know their training, then they can balance the rest of their life. So they can still do their uni studies, or some of them are still working, or it's just knowing when they can switch off from netball and not be fully engrossed in it. And that's probably the biggest thing. It's when you're in hub, it's netball, netball, netball. And, the biggest thing to be able to get the best is to be able to have that balance. And that's probably been a big focus for us.
Stace, talk to us about, we spoke this was your 100th game, which is really exciting. We know that your time leading the Fever team is going to end this year as you move on to coaching full-time in that head coach of the Australian Diamonds program. You had your last game in front of the Green Army, as you call them, over in Perth. I think that was, I can't even remember now how long ago that was. Was it a couple of weeks, a couple of games? I'm not sure. Talk to us about that, because It is a special, it's a special club, and the fans are, I think, probably the most passionate of any of the netball teams across Australia.
Yeah, it was, I think I've started to become a sook in the last couple of weeks. Every time we talk about the club, it's obviously a realisation that my time there is coming to an end. And I guess that's been my family for a long time now. I moved to Perth when I was 21, so I've been around that environment for a long time. And as I sort of said to quite a few people, they they've given me opportunity as a player. They, you know, embraced me to be able to grow as a person, and they certainly took a chance with me as a rookie coach. So I'm fully indebted to all the things that I've been able to achieve whilst being there, and to play in front of the Green Army, like, it was just phenomenal. I think we had 6,500. It was a real quick turnaround as to when that game was being played, and people just stayed around at the end of the game, and to be standing there and being acknowledged, I guess, for what we'd done as a club. It was just a really nice thing, and everyone's just hoping borders drop so that they can get over here when finals come around.
Yeah, we're all crossing fingers that those borders continue to drop around Australia, that's for sure. Talk to us about what's happening on court for the Fever, Stacey. On last night, you had a really nice win over the Firebirds, who are trying to make a charge and impact the finals. Janelle Fowler, 64 out of 66 is what she shot, which is probably more than most teams shoot as a whole. You've got some... She's just being incredibly well supported across the court as well. You just must be super impressed with her as an individual. But also, you know, there are times when she's come off the court and you've played and actually had some success without her too. So I feel like the flexibility of the team is potentially greater than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got great versatility and depth across the group, and I think their role clarity is something that stands out most. They know when they enter the court what it is that we expect of them to be able to do out there. And Janelle's just an absolute professional. We had the Collingwood game before ours, and I think Shimona got out there and got quite a few goals. And
she was amazing. She shot 69 out of 71. That's quite a few.
And all we needed to do was flag that to Janelle that her record was nearly broken, and then you should see the focus that comes in on her face. She doesn't want to be second. She wants to really rule the roost, I guess, in that area. And I think the best thing about the group is just the way we're moving the ball. You know, obviously Janelle gets a lot of goals, but we've got to be able to move it with speed and the entry point to the circle. So to get 79 goals as a team last night just shows that there's really good connection and cohesion out on court. And defensively, it was tough. It was a real battle against Firebirds to even get ball. But when we did, we had to make the most of it. And, you know, we came up with some good ball at crucial times. And it was just an absolute grind of a game.
Half, they are some big numbers. Individually, ridiculous. 69 out of 71 for Shimona Nelson from the Magpies and 64 out of 66 from Janelle Fowler from the Fever. They are huge numbers.
Steve Hocking sitting there going, how do I make this happen in the NFL? More goals is what he's saying. He just wants more goals. Stacey, doing a great job. It's been a remarkable season to this point for the Fever to be able to come back from the start that you had and be where you are with a couple of weeks to go. We appreciate you being on our program. We wish you the best of luck for the last two home and away games and the finals as well. Good luck.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Stacey Marinkovic, coach to 100th game for the Fever on the weekend, or last night, against the Firebirds. Defeated them by 10, 79, 69. 75, 68, the Magpies over the Swifts was the big result.
Big result. Last night. Huge. Too. And the Magpies are... they probably wanted the Firebirds to take the Fever down, really, in that result, to give them a bit of a better chance to jump into that finals. But the Magpies are finishing the season very nicely. Thank you very much. Kelsey Brown is playing very well, which will do her selection chances into the Diamonds a world of good.
Whitey's favourite. Now, last night was the AFLW draft. Sherelle, you're a blue bagger. You're one of us.
Yes.
You would have been watching to see what the baggers did at pick number 6 in the Victorian draft. I could tell you, as you would have found out, that Annie Lee was the selection from the Geelong Falcons, All-Australian this year in the carnival, and she's going to be wearing the navy blue, which is very much in the family traditions as well. She joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Annie.
Hi.
How are you feeling this morning?
I don't even know how to feel, to be honest. It all feels like a dream, so I'm kind of pinching myself.
There was plenty of energy in the living room last night when we saw you on the coverage, and we had a chat later. You're a Carlton family. Knowing that you are going to be a Carlton player, how does that sit with you?
Oh, I mean, it hasn't sat with me yet. Like, my parents had even trouble
getting to sleep, really. I think they're more excited than I am, and I'm incredibly excited. So I don't know how they're feeling, to be honest. But, yeah, it was a really exciting night. Lots of emotions when, we heard my name get called out. So, yeah, it was a really good night.
A big part of that excitement would have been that you being coached by the great Daniel Harford.
Stop it.
But congratulations. It is a really exciting time and really exciting moment for you. Is this something that you have been building towards? Is it something you've had your eye on for quite some time?
I think when I first started kicking around the footy, AFLW wasn't a thing.
Yep.
And then obviously as it progressed and it did become a thing, it was very, yep, that's what I want to do. But I guess I just, when I was younger and only just started playing footy, I thought it was going to be impossible. You know, I saw Lily Mithen from Newtown get drafted and I was like, that's just amazing. I don't think I could get there. But as the years progressed, managed to, you know, become a part of the Geelong Falcons and obviously the Vic Country team this year. It's been a big part of my footy journey and a goal of mine for quite some time. So, yeah, really happy with it.
Andy, that's an interesting one. So are you saying that the fact that there was a pathway, a top level to play at the AFLW, did that encourage you to continue playing that sport so you could see how far you could take it?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a big part of it. I guess as soon as, you know, I saw that you could really push yourself and get to that level, I think that was something that I really wanted to do. But, yeah.
You got any questions about Daniel?
No, there's no questions. It's not about me, it's about Annie.
How to handle him?
This is about Annie.
How to ignore him?
Don't worry about that garbage, Annie. Don't you worry about that. Tell us, for those that are listening that don't know much about your playing style, who do you play like, for those as a reference point for people listening?
Yeah, I think what I would say a little bit like, just as I've played alongside when I used to play in under-18s with Newtown and was able to train with her down at Geelong Falcons in the first year, I'd say a little bit like Denby Taylor.
Yep.
I think she's got those clean hands and that kind of intercepting role, and she's able to dispose of it pretty accurate coming out of defence. So I'd say a little bit like her. But then, you know, there's a bit like Maddie Press-Barkas and the way she goes about tackling and, you know, just keep doing the second efforts a little bit. But, yeah.
Now, I was reading last night, I thought I knew most about you, Annie, but I found something out last night which intrigued me, that the thing you most like to do, most people like to kick a goal or take a big hanger or do something like that. The favourite thing for you in a game of footy is to get someone in a rundown tackle as they're getting ready for goal. That's an unusual liking.
Yeah. Well, I think because obviously being a part of the Geelong Falcons, I have mostly playing down back lines, so I don't get... you know, a big chance in kicking a goal or anything like that. So I think as a backline person, I think that's probably one of my favourites. I've been able to not necessarily run down tackle on a girl going for goal, but been able to do that this season. It's an amazing feeling. So I love to do that. That's one of my favourite parts of the game. So
yeah. And also that big intercept mark. I know that you like doing that too. Got a nice tradition of that with Liam Jones, for example, in the men's team at Carlton. So you'll be able to take some tips off him, perhaps. Do you think there'll be much interaction with that team? How do you expect it will go when you're in that environment?
I really don't know. I think it's more, you know, if I was to get given the opportunity, you know, before the draft, I was kind of thinking if I'm able to get the opportunity, I'd just be like, oh, well, whatever happens at the club, I'm going to be extremely happy with. So even if that's just seeing someone walk to their car or, you know, anything like that, it's going to be pretty exciting for me. So, and exciting for Dad, he's going to want to know every detail. So.
Dad's hardcore. Dad,
is he?
Dad put the life-size cutout of Patrick Cripps up in the living room last night.
Oh, I saw that photo. That is brilliant, Annie. I love that.
It's still up. It's still up.
It's still up.
I think it's going to be up there for a few months now. It's going to be like our little lucky charm. So.
Well, it makes sense to me. So makes sense to me. We'll get you one of your own cutouts sooner rather than later too. And what about school today? Are you going to go back to school today?
No, I'm not actually.
Good result.
Well, I go to CEDA, so it's really flexible.
Yep.
And have obviously I've been talking to Will, and they've mentioned heading to Icon Park today at 1 for the photos.
Oh, yes, the top 10 are coming together at Icon Park today. Oh, look, I may find a way to sneak up there. I might just go and say g'day to Annie and welcome her to the fold. Congratulations, Annie. It's been a long journey for you and the family, and absolutely overjoyed to have you in Navy for hopefully the next 15 years of your AFLW career. Good luck. We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
Annie Lee, Carlton's latest AFLW recruit. Well, like first
fantastic.
Pick, our first pick in the draft.
Well done. I know that
she's
you had your eye on her. And what a ripper she is to chat to as well. I just love that when people are starting their journey in this sort of way, that excitement, and it's a bit of the unknown, and I'm going to embrace, I love that sense of I'm just going to embrace it, or whatever comes my way, I'm going to take it on and enjoy it. So it's great to hear.
We're going to have some fun with Annie.
Yep.
Did you hear a couple of times the Scottish accent?
Yes,
through.
I did.
Yeah, Mum's heavily accented.
Yeah.
They lived in Scotland for a little while.
Just a couple of times it just came out.
There were a few. She's been back in Australia since she was 8 or 9 years old. So, there's a bit of a hangover still.
My word, there is. Mm. Every now and then you can just hear it's clear as day.
Yeah.
Mum's as thick as anything,
right.
The accent. So,
okay.
Not surprised.
Okay.
But Dad's hilarious. They're the great stories. They're
intense.
The great things. The family. The family responses to the kids getting drafted is a pretty cool thing. It's nice to be a part
for
of.
Sure.
All the families last night that got their opportunity, the kids have got their opportunity in the AFLW. Good luck to them. Let's get to Justin Rodsky, the Melbourne Storm CEO. The most talked about contract in Australian sport was sorted out yesterday. My understanding is he was just waiting for the 5K radius limit to be lifted before he signalled his intent to stay with the Melbourne Storm. 5 years for mega coach Craig Bellamy, and Justin Rodsky would be very pleased about that, I reckon. Hello, Justin.
Morning, Harf. Good to be with you.
Nice to be with you. How nice is it to have this out of the way, this commitment between the club and Craig for the next 5 years?
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic for everyone involved in the club and everyone involved in the Melbourne Storm family. You know, everyone from our staff, obviously our coaching staff and fitness staff, football staff and players from a retention point of view, as well as our members and fans who obviously have lived all the highs and the lows of the journey of Craig Bellamy and his time at the Melbourne Storm, which has now gone for, well, coming up to 20 years, and next year he'll coach his 500th game. So he's been a remarkable coach, probably one of the greatest coaches of all time in the NRL, if not in Australian sport.
That's amazing. 500 games. You've locked him away for 5 years, which is exciting, but there is still some flex within that 5 years. As you mentioned, head coach next year, and then it's almost like a year-on-year, let's see what happens, let's see how it goes. Is there an idea for next year to start that succession planning, or is that something that we'll wait for next year to happen and then plan?
No, it's something that we'll do year-on-year. I mean, obviously, we'll be looking at planning and scheduling and what we're going to do from a long-term perspective, but at the same time we're hoping obviously that he continues on each year. We'll sit down with him really early on each year to understand exactly where he's at, how he's feeling, and we think that his standing in the game has earned him that right, and he'll obviously be heavily involved in the transition and the succession. So whether he's involved as senior coach or as our coaching director in the coming years, we'll have Craig Bellamy around the club, which is fantastic.
What was it like, Justin? New CEO coming in and saying, right, we've got to get this guy done, one of the biggest names in the sport. Was it an intimidating process, or did you learn pretty quickly that it's where he wanted to stay and it was just about the details?
Yeah, hello, Whitey. It was an interesting one because, you know, he's such a big figure and he's very much an old-school coach. But once you get to know him, he's someone that's very genuine and honest and reliable and trustworthy. So I was always confident that he was going to stay. It was just a matter of working through exactly what the contract looked like, exactly what the terms were in terms of the time frame, and just making sure that we'd given him all the time that he needed to make the decision. He had a lot of things going on from a family perspective. You know, this is a big deal for him. It was a big time frame for him, and he wanted to make sure he made the right decision for him and his family. So we gave him the time he needed. At times it was a little bit frustrating as we were working through it, obviously wanting to
to lock him down so that we could move on. But, you know, we're really thrilled with the result now, and we're wrapped to have him locked away for the next 5 years.
So, unfortunately, you lost Dale Finucane, and we were talking about this earlier in the week about the significance of that loss. But now you've got Craig locked away. Does that help you retain a lot of the players that you want to retain and actually help your list build, knowing that there's some certainty with Craig?
It absolutely does. You know, he's one of the most important components to any player coming to the Melbourne Storm. And, you know, there's not many players that leave the Melbourne Storm.
No.
Usually they leave, if they do leave, for the right reasons. And Dale Finucane's a great example of that. You know, a co-captain of the club, an absolute stalwart, a fantastic bloke off the field. You know, gives his heart and soul every time he goes out onto the pitch. So for us to lose him, you know, he got a long-term deal. He's from up in Bega, so, you know, Cronulla obviously is quite close for him in terms of his family. And in the end, we just didn't have the salary cap space. But now you talk about people like Brandon Smith and Ryan Pappenhausen, who really are the future of the Melbourne Storm, such an important part of our spine. For them to know that Craig Bellamy is going to be around is significant, and will play a big part in ensuring that we get their contract signed.
Well, they might have to build a statue of you as well, Justin, for getting this done, because this was one of the most talked about contracts in Australian sport, this one. So many offers for a man that deserves lots of offers and lots of opportunities to do pretty much whatever the hell he wants. But we are wrapped that he's decided to stay in Melbourne for the Storm for the next 5 years. And hopefully it gets things going again on Saturday night for the game against the, who we got this week? The Panthers on Saturday night, which is going to be a big game, a grand final replay. So a big week for the Melbourne Storm. Well done to you and the team.
Yeah, thanks, Harf. Thanks, Whitey. Thanks, Sherelle. And a big thanks to all the Melbourne Storm members. Obviously, we've been in Melbourne doing it tough and haven't been able to see the team play this year. Hopefully, we'll be back in the next couple of weeks and we can play a couple of home games towards the end of the season and get everyone fired up for a big final series.
I've got a feeling that might be pretty easily done down here with the way the mighty Melbourne Storm are going. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Justin Rodsky, the CEO of the Melbourne Storm. Bellamy locked in for five.
And the Broncos and the Broncos and the Sharks came at him pretty hard with some
more
really good offers.
More
so it's a great signing.
Well, he's actually said he was quite tempted by the Sharks, which is interesting because obviously the link with Queensland that he might have gone back there.
Back
but
there.
5 years. I want to talk about this tomorrow, Daniel, the difference, the way the Melbourne Storm have handled Craig Bellamy versus the way Hawthorn decide to go another direction with a coaching legend.
We'll do it tomorrow.
Good discussion.
We'll do it tomorrow. We didn't even discuss Kylie McEwen and her swim yesterday.
What did she do yesterday?
What did she do yesterday? Wash your mouth out.
Well, she should
wash it out with soap.
So should, well, that's right. So should she. Yeah, so it's not easy to say. Michael Felgate, good morning to you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Would you have said that after a gold medal performance? What she said?
A lot more.
Sherelle, have you ever said something similar on camera?
Absolutely. I don't speak like that. All of McMahon watching.
Joe Griggs summed it up beautifully, though, didn't she?
She definitely did. Definitely not. Oh, yeah, I love the reaction even from the initial F-bomb drop. It was like the next bit wasn't great either.
First time we've seen a C-bomb and an F-bomb in the same race.
Yes, I love that.
Magnificent from Joe Griggs.
I love that.
I did love the photo, too, of Emily Seabomb and an 8-year-old, Kayla McEwen.
So
the surface yesterday as well. The whole idol thing works. If you get a chance to have a photo with a kid who thinks you're pretty cool,
absolutely
do it, which you've done plenty of times, Sherelle. And Michael Felgate, he just goes up to kids now and says a photo. They don't ask him.
My own don't even have photos with me. Let alone randoms.
What's coming up with the...
This is RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
We know the NBL is going from strength to strength. It has been for the last 5 years or so. And yesterday, the news got even better with a record broadcast deal announced by Larry Kesselman and co. And Jeremy Lolliger is a big part of that, the CEO, the commish of the NBL, who joins us to tell us more about it. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, gang. Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you on such a... an auspicious occasion, as you say, the best media deal ever in the history of the NBL.
It's quite remarkable what's happened to this competition. We are full of admiration for what everyone has done in the back office to get this to a point where it can now get a deal like this. When you started, Jeremy, can I go back a little bit? When you took it over a couple of years ago, did you think that this was a possibility at the time? Or, you know, was it a far-fetched hope rather than a part of reality?
Yeah, it was certainly what we were aspiring towards, but it seemed like a bit of a pipe dream at the time, particularly Maybe this is what we were aspiring towards when we first took it over, and then once we had our feet under the desk for a little while, we realised, wow, this is perhaps harder than we thought. This is going to take a little bit of elbow grease. And it's certainly been a lot of work between now and then, but yesterday was certainly a watershed moment in terms of fulfilling the beginning of our aspirations. But don't worry, we're never short of some ambition and new ideas, and we're not going to rest on our laurels now, I can tell you that.
So tell us about it. Three-year deal with ESPN, who are, as we know, are a global giant in the coverage of sport. Every game, 140 Hungry Jack's NBL regular season games plus finals, all covered. And then an association with Foxtel, KO and News Corp as well. So it's not just broadcast, but print as well.
Yeah, I think the magic in this deal is that it's more than a broadcast deal. It's a true media partnership. And
yep.
As you just referred to, you've got the might of ESPN, the undisputed home of basketball in Australia, will be alongside the NBA, the WNBA, the NCAA, backed by the Disney Group, of course. But then the Foxtel Group and KO, the fastest-growing sports streaming platform in the country, and then, very, very importantly, the commitment from News Corp, all of that editorial coverage that comes along with the heft of having so many mastheads, so many websites. I think it'll give fans unprecedented access to the game, not just in terms of the live broadcast, but in terms of all of that shoulder content, the storytelling that fans really crave. That's what they'll be getting in abundance now.
And that's really exciting. I love all that part of it, not just what's happening on court, but what's happening off. Jeremy, tell us about how this is framed as an NBL deal. How does that impact and influence the WNBL, as you said, grassroots? Is this something that's going to impact at a greater level, or is this really just something that's going to be used at that top end?
Look, it's an NBL deal, as you said, but it is certainly going to have an influence on community and grassroots basketball in the sense that NBL 1 is also a beneficiary of this deal. So every NBL 1 game will be streamed live across our platforms, but importantly, 10 NBL 1 games a week are going to be shown on KO as well. So there's a huge amount of NBL 1 basketball being played across the country now, and this is the first time that level of basketball will be shown on a nationally recognised platform. So it's a huge win across the board. WNBL, of course, is independent. It sits with Basketball Australia, but we're certainly hoping that we'll see every game of WNBL back on TV this year.
Jeremy, you've educated us, I think, over the last couple of years just about the media rights when it comes to the NBL and how many people watch it. And it's not just about the ratings that you get each weekend. It's about your streaming numbers and all these sorts of things. So I'm interested in that, and also the overseas appeal through, you know, the way that these things will be broadcast now, particularly through that link with ESPN.
Yeah, so the ESPN component, ESPN Australia and New Zealand, is distinct from ESPN in the US. So this doesn't mean that it's going to be on TVs in every home in the US, but we certainly have carved out rights for continuing broadcast into various parts of the world. Those are starting to be picked up already at the moment. We've got some great traction overseas, really buoyed by the likes of LaMelo Ball and Didi Luzada over the last couple of years, coming obviously from international markets and going on to play in the NBA. But the Next Stars program continues to go from strength to strength. We've got a young fellow by the name of Usman Dieng, a French star, joining the New Zealand Breakers this year. So again, a new market from which we've never had a Next Star player before. And if you watch this space, there'll be another few signings, I suspect, over the course of the next few days. Again, players from new markets where we've never really had much access. And then Kai Soto, the young seven-footer from the Philippines signing with the Adelaide 36ers. The Philippines are basketball mad. They're the third biggest basketball economy in the world.
Oh, wow.
And when we announced Kai's signing, we actually had more social media engagement than when we announced LaMelo Ball. That's how big a deal
wow.
it is that Kai Soto is coming to the NBL.
Well, actually, news just through a minute ago, Melbourne United told me on the Twitterverse that they are pleased to announce the signing of German NBA prospect Ariel Hokporti for the 2021-22 season via the NBL's Next Star program. Seven-footer from Germany. So that's wow. another one, Jeremy, that's coming to town.
Wasn't sure if that had broken just yet, but absolutely. So Ariel, we've been working on for quite some time now. He's a prodigious talent, an incredible athlete. As you read, Ben, he's a seven-footer. He's built like a hardened professional, and I think he's going to contribute enormously to that Melbourne United side before making his way to the NBA.
Oh, he looks like a beast in this photo. He's going to be good fun to watch. And on top of all this, there's still a free-to-air component still to be announced, so it just gets better. There's always more good news around the corner with the NBA, Jeremy.
Yeah, watch this space. So there is a free-to-air component already as part of this deal, which is the fact that two games will be shown on KO Freebies each week in front of the paywall. So you don't need to pay, you just need an account. But those same two games will also be broadcast with a free-to-air TV partner, and that will hopefully be announced in the not-too-distant future.
Well, it's super exciting for basketball in Australia, but certainly the NBL with what you've been able to achieve, you and the team, in the last 5 years or so, Jeremy. Well done on the deal. It is
Thank
unbelievable, and we'll look forward to chatting to you soon.
Good on you guys. Talk soon.
Jeremy Lulliger, the CEO of the NBL, the commish, as we like to call him around here. It's quite a remarkable deal. Quite remarkable what they've done with basketball.
Full stop. It really is amazing.
As Jeremy said, it's a package. It's a whole media package to tell the story of basketball, not just show the games. It's good.
It's fantastic. Magnificent. All right, let's tell you who else is magnificent. Johnny Bowden. He's the best.
I'm a complete media package. As long as you don't see me.
You're my complete media package, Johnny. You got the world's latest news.